as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and the views of our guest. And this evening, for the first hour, our guest is Pastor David Whitney. And we're going to be talking about the Constitution. Now, Pastor Whitney is affiliated with the Institute on the Constitution, which supports Radio Liberty, and certainly we support their effort to try to educate the American people about our priceless Constitution. America is different than any other nation in the world. Why? Why? Because we have a government that was created to protect our God-given rights. In all other forms of government, people have certain freedoms because they've been given to them by government. In America, why, people have God-given rights, and of course, governments was created to protect those God-given rights, and that's what it says in the Articles of Incorporation of our country, the Declaration of Independence. And to protect these rights, referring to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and to protect these rights, governments are instituted among men, depriving their power from the consent of the governed. That's what it was all about. And the whole idea of the A constitution was to limit the power of the federal government so men could be free. Now, we've gotten a long way from there, because there really are people who want a dictatorship in America, and they've been working for generations to have us forget what America was really all about. And they've infiltrated our great tax-exempt foundations and our schools and certainly our media. And so the average individual really doesn't understand that the whole concept of America was to limit the power of the federal government to solve our problems at the state and local level. And that way people could be free. You wouldn't have a federal government that would have the money to go out and fight imperialistic wars or try to dominate the world or give the small group of wicked people who you will always find working in government the ability to control the masses and to lay the groundwork for a dictatorship. And if you don't think there is a plan for dictatorship, you ought to go back and read Major General Smedley's Butler's book written in the 1930s. Well, actually, it was written later than that, but it was about Smedley Butler, who in the 30s was asked to lead a revolution to take over the country and establish a fascist society. Or certainly the William Stills, the New World Order. Now, we do carry this one, where William's dad was approached during the Nixon years. They wanted to declare a dictatorship then. But nobody has had the audacity that the current administration has to actually pass the presidential directives, as they did on the 9th of May of this year, that allows the president to establish military dictatorship at any time he wants without congressional approval and to last as long as he feels it should. Well, with that as a background, David, please come on the line and tell our listeners about the foundations of our freedom and hopefully what we can do to reclaim them.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. And it's so important to learn these things. And the reason why, as you mentioned, our current administration is getting away with just wholesale violation of our God-given rights is Americans have lost an understanding that our founders had of what government's all about, just as you very clearly shared, and what the whole purpose of our founding documents was to secure our God-given rights against a tyrannical government. In that case, it was King George III, and in this case, we have another George, not the third, but nonetheless, just as tyrannical as that wicked King of England.
We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney from the Institute on the Constitution. David, pick the story up.
We have looked at the seven articles of the Constitution, and then we've looked at the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments that were all ratified at the same time. And then we began to look at the subsequent amendments, and you'll recall that the 10 amendments actually set a wall around the operations and functions of the federal government, saying this is all it can do. It must stay inside these boundaries. And we've discussed how the subsequent amendments, largely, with a few minor exceptions, but largely the subsequent amendments, 11 to 27, all are designed in one way, shape, or form to broach that wall that the Bill of Rights created around the federal government and give the federal government powers that our founders never wanted to see the federal government obtain, because they knew if they obtained these sort of powers that they would there would be ultimately no limit to the kind of tyranny that was developed. And we've discussed the 13th Amendment, I believe, last time to some degree, and just to review that, as the war to prevent Southern independence, we need to remember that the Southern states were just doing what the original 13 colonies did in declaring independence from England. The Southern states were doing the same thing, based upon the rights as clearly spelled out in the Declaration of Independence, that when a government, when any form of government, they said, becomes destructive of the purpose for which God ordained government in the first place, that is to secure your God-given rights. When a government becomes destructive of that purpose, you have another God-given right. That God-given right is to either alter that form of government or to abolish it. And they said basically that's what they were doing. They were separating themselves from the other states because they saw the federal government violating some of the terms of the contract that they had formed with it in the Constitution.
Yeah, well, I think it's so important people understand this had nothing to do with slavery.
That's right.
The Emancipation Proclamation was not declared until about what?
64 was it? But late in the process, and actually Lincoln said in his first inaugural address he had no intention of touching the institution of slavery. You can read it; it's easily available on the web. It's very clear that he was pulling a political ploy largely to keep the European powers from siding with the South against the North, and he knew that the European powers would be persuaded by the kind of propaganda ploy that the Emancipation Proclamation really was.
And of course, I think it's important to remember that Lincoln only freed the slaves in the South. He didn't free them in the North. He freed them in the South where he couldn't free them, and he did not free them in the North where he could have. And so it is all simply smoke and mirrors. We'll be back in just a moment here with Pastor David Whitney. Well, certainly we were just talking with Pastor Whitney about the amendments as they begin to come in, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. And, of course, they had to do with slavery after the Civil War. But the Civil War was not fought for slavery. And as we pointed out during the break there, why the Emancipation Proclamation was not certainly put through initially when the war started. It was well into the war after there had been draft riots in the North. People didn't want to fight, and they didn't want to kill their fellow Americans. They killed 2,000 Americans who didn't want to be drafted in the North, and who then to try to justify the slaughter of Americans who objected to getting involved in this fraternal war where a brother would kill brother. Why, of course, Lincoln passed the Emancipation Proclamation where he freed the slaves in the South, where he couldn't free them because he had no authority at that point. And he left the slaves in the North he could have freed, but he left them in slavery. Understand, this is the ultimate in hypocrisy. Nobody can defend slavery. And most Southerners did not have slaves. This was about trying to avoid a highly centralized, tyrannical federal government. And the major forces behind the Civil War wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., to destroy the fabric of the Constitution, because they recognized it was a bulwark against centralization of power. It and the Constitution stood in the way of their plans to establish a powerful centralized government that one day would be used to bring about a one-world government, a new world religion, and a new world ruler. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, they were working here even at the time of the Civil War. So you picked the story up there, David.
So the 13th Amendment, ratified in 1865, essentially abolished slavery. It simply abolished the institution of slavery. It did not abolish any other forms of segregation or forms of discrimination, and we know that from the civil rights cases the U.S. Supreme Court heard in 1883. So within less than 20 years, cases were heard, and it was clearly just slavery that was being abolished, nothing beyond slavery. And again, you might say, well, this is a good thing, and the reason it is not a good thing is it's not the job of the federal government to deal with this issue. It is the job of the individual states. The states were to oversee the issues such as slavery. And that's the whole point why the war was fought, was to end the independence of the individual states, that they had a real sense of sovereignty. You know, in most of the states prior to the war, people looked at their state as their primary allegiance. So General Lee referred to Virginia as my country. It was my country. His country wasn't the United States, maybe you with a small u. It was his own state, the state of Virginia. And how could he, as Lincoln had invited him to take the lead in fighting against the South, how could he said, fight against his own country, his own state of Virginia? And so people's loyalty to their state was very strong, and the war was designed to break that loyalty in spirit, but then also follow it up with legislation which would further break that strength that the individual states had. And this 13th Amendment did that, because it basically said the states could not determine the issue of slavery for themselves. The federal government was going to determine the issue, and it was going to tell them they could not have slaves, and initially this was just interpreted as abolishing the institution of slavery, which was in that time frame showing the original intent of the 13th Amendment. And there was one dissenting Supreme Court justice, Justice Harlan. He argued that the 13th Amendment did more than abolish slavery as an institution. He said it also abolished the badges and incidents of slavery that are reminiscent of the slavery era. In other words, segregation and discrimination and denial of civil rights, all of those things. So it was many years later, in 1968, that another Supreme Court case basically overturned those previous civil rights cases. This was Jones v. Mayer. And here it was stated that the whole purpose of the 13th Amendment was to abolish not just the institution, but every form of segregation, every form of discrimination. In other words, they clearly were violating the original intent of the 13th Amendment in their decision. But their decision carried, and then such things as busing were to follow, where, oh, you cannot discriminate based on education or where a person lives, and we're going to bus people miles and miles away from their homes, and all of the mess that resulted from that attempt to socially engineer from the federal level what was happening at the state and local level.
Well, I think it's important to realize, of course, that the North had done away with all of this sort of discrimination. Certainly the Western states had done away with discrimination, and it was gradually being done away with in the South, but they didn't want a solution. They wanted a confrontation because they wanted to justify centralizing power in Washington, D.C. And on one hand, you had people really who, you know, were trying to solve these problems in the South. On the other hand, you had secret agents working in the South opposing laws that would have done away with discrimination. Why? Because they wanted the confrontation. They wanted, of course, to be able to justify centralizing all power in Washington, D.C. And I will tell you, some of the major corporations, specifically Chevron and other corporations, were going right along with the apartheid and the discrimination in the South, you know, prior to the civil rights laws. Why? because they were part of this cabal that wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. And so understand that the majority of the people in the South recognized, of course, how unfair the laws were. But there were agents from the other side who were blocking efforts to do away with those laws, and they got the confrontation, and they centralized their power in Washington, D.C., which is what Chevron and Exxon and Rockefeller interests and the people of great power have always wanted, all power to the federal government, because it's a lot easier to control the politicians in one national capital than the politicians in 48 or 50 individual states. Pick up the story there, David.
And so we see that, you know, the issue of segregation and ending segregation in schools. And Little Rock, Arkansas, you have, you know, the National Guard called out to see to it that one girl gets into the building and all these kind of things. What you have is the federal government imposing power on the state governments that our system was never designed to permit the federal government to do that. And, of course, they did it in something that they could morally justify. In other words, they picked an issue that was a hot issue of the time, and like you say, they fomented it. They aided it, embedded it on both sides of the issue to bring it to a confrontation like that. But they did so not because they cared about the blacks, not because they were trying to really do something good, but rather they were trying to destroy our system of government, of checks and balances, particularly the check that the state governments were to have against the federal government. The state governments were to have the majority of powers in their hands, the federal government very limited, very restricted powers. And the 13th Amendment, as well as its misinterpretation, has been used to destroy the powers that should be in the hands of the state governments so that they can serve as a check against a tyrannical federal government. Well, it's interesting in that 1968 decision, Jones v. Mayer, there was one dissenting view that said, wait a minute, you've misinterpreted this, and it happened to be Justice Harlan's grandson. Justice Harlan was the one who had the dissenting view of the 1883 case, which was saying that the 13th Amendment only abolished slavery. So his grandson got the message and understood better than his grandfather what the 13th Amendment truly was about in its original intent. Well, beyond that aspect of the 13th Amendment, an even more damaging and dangerous part of the 13th Amendment is the final clause. Congress, it says, shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. This phrase is not only in the 13th Amendment, it's in the 14th and the 15th and the 18th and the 19th and the 23rd and the 24th and the 26th. It had never been used before the 13th Amendment. And basically, it is a blank check handed to Congress. Do whatever you think is appropriate. Well, who's going to determine what is appropriate legislation to enforce this article? Well, of course, Congress is going to be the one that determines what's appropriate. This is a huge grant of power to the federal government, specifically to the legislative branch of government, that's extremely, extremely dangerous. And I believe our founders would have never tolerated it had they been alive at that time. They would have said, that is a violation of the very structure we established, whereby the states have a check against federal power. Here, the check against federal power by the states is completely abolished in this particular area. If the states have no power, and the federal government has all power, as our founders knew, all men are sinners, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and therefore you never give unlimited, unchecked power to any individual or any group of people, whether it's King George III or Parliament. Our founders experienced tyranny because there was no check against the powers of that king, the monarch, or against Parliament. And so they structured our form of government with multiple checks and balances, not only on the federal level, the three branches, but on the levels between the federal government and the state government and the local and right on down to the town. And so these sort of checks were being destroyed in not only the design of the 13th Amendment, but then its subsequent misinterpretation that comes right on down into the 20th century and even on down into our own day today.
Well, we're certainly, it's important that people understand, well, this idea of a nation where men could be free. where the power of the authority of government over the lives of the people must be restricted by the change of the Constitution. That's what America was about. And as Thomas Jefferson said so well, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Well, they're taking them off the federal government and preparing them for the people. David, pick the story up there.
Well, we come next to the 14th Amendment, which just 3 years later, in 1868, was so-called ratified. And we'll talk about the so-called...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
words of the way, of course, through the decades, and most recently, you know, going here in the 1960s, they totally changed the meaning of the 14th Amendment. They could have certainly demanded a clarification by trying to amend it, but they didn't want to amend it because they knew the people wouldn't go along with it. What they really wanted was all power in Washington, D.C., and so they put their Supreme Court justices in, men who would distort the meaning of the law, because it's always been about an all-powerful, centralized government based in Washington, D.C., and the destiny of America to lead the world. We'll pick up the story. So what happened with the 14th Amendment, David?
Well, the 14th Amendment contains a restriction here on the states. May not deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And the courts have subsequently ruled that liberty and due process include most all of the rights of the Bill of Rights, and therefore the Bill of Rights applies not just to the federal government, but the Bill of Rights applies to all the states. And this is called the Incorporation Doctrine, the idea that the 14th Amendment incorporates the entire Bill of Rights and applies it to the states. Now, when you look at the text of the 14th Amendment itself, the only thing it takes from the Bill of Rights that applies to the states is life, liberty, or property. A person may not be deprived of those without due process of law. Now, the false incorporation doctrine, I'll tell you why it's false. The false incorporation doctrine is believed by almost all attorneys today because the Supreme Court repeatedly uses it as its measure of why it imposes certain things on states. For example, take the Supreme Court's 1963 decision to say no prayer in the public schools, take the Bible out of the public schools, tear the Ten Commandments down off the wall. All of those decisions were made because of this incorporation doctrine interpreting the 14th Amendment. They're saying the entire First Amendment, Second, Third, Fourth, all the first ten amendments, the Bill of Rights, now applies to the states, which means the First Amendment, and of course their false interpretation of the First Amendment, not only applies to the federal government, it applies to the state government, it applies to the local government, it applies to the school board. The individual school board may not establish religion and so on. And so they have misinterpreted what the First Amendment said and then taken that misinterpretation and forced it on the states all the way down to the local school level, the Supreme Court telling the local school what it can and cannot do. This is a complete violation of the intent of those who ratified the 14th Amendment. And we know that because within 10 years of when the ratification, we'll talk about its questionability in a bit, but the ratification took place, within 10 years, another amendment was proposed, the Blaine Amendment. And you'll never hear about it because it never passed. It did not succeed. It was never sent to the states for ratification. It never made it out of both House and Congress and Senate. So this Blaine Amendment took the exact wording of the First Amendment and just inserted, instead of Congress, states. That states may not establish religion, that states may not prohibit the free exercise thereof, and so on and so forth throughout the wording of the First Amendment. So the Blaine Amendment was proposing to impose the First Amendment on the individual states. It failed because those who were there to ratify the 14th Amendment knew that it did not do anything more than what its literal text says, that a state may not deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The only thing it did is lifted that one phrase of the Fifth Amendment and apply that one aspect of the Fifth Amendment to the states. It does not take the First Amendment, Second, Third, and apply it to the states. Now, many states have, in their own constitutions, like here in Maryland, various aspects of the Bill of Rights, securing the rights of the individual citizens, and that's appropriate for it to be done at the state level, but it is completely a violation of the separation of powers between federal and state government for the 14th Amendment to be applied through the false incorporation doctrine as it is done today. So what has happened today is the 14th Amendment is being misinterpreted and therefore misapplied in every case where the federal government comes down and restricts the rights of state, local, and even down to school governments to do that which they were given freedom to do by our founders. Now the federal government tells them they don't have the freedom to do that any longer.
And of course, this is why we have the problems. This is why we can't regulate pornography locally. Why we can't regulate abortion? Then you may be pro or anti-abortion, but it should be left up to the state and the local community, not to the federal government. And that's why we're in the trouble we are today. Well, David, pick the story right up there.
Well, the problem with the 14th Amendment is it was not at first ratified. In other words, it was passed two houses and was sent out to the states, and it was rejected, mostly by southern states, but there were some northern states. New Jersey rejected it, and I was just reading about it here recently, and it was interesting to see that there was a couple of northern states as well as all the southern states rejected it. It failed the first time. And you know what they did in Congress? These were the radical Republicans. People need to remember the Republican Party started in a, not a conservative mode, but a radical mode to change our form of government. And that's why Lincoln, as a radical Republican, set about to destroy really what was a good balance of power between state and federal government. Well, what they did is they sent troops, the occupying troops, through the South to abolish the state legislatures in all those states that have voted against the 14th Amendment. They simply abolished them. And then they put in their puppet governments who would vote to ratify the 14th Amendment. So basically at gunpoint, those states in the South that had free elections, that had freely elected their representatives to their state legislature, those people were stripped of their right to vote on this issue. And so the 14th Amendment, even though they had the numbers, it was done illegally. It was done illegitimately. And actually, Seward, who was Secretary of State at the time, he protested this. He said, "This is wrong. You can't hold these people at gunpoint and make them ratify this 14th Amendment." He protested, but the radical Republicans had a way of persuading him, and I don't remember the exact details. It's an interesting element of history there, but ultimately, they got him to turn it around, and he ultimately declared that the 14th Amendment was now part of the U.S. Constitution. Illegally, no doubt at all in my mind, illegally ratified. And it's interesting that this has become the most important amendment since the Bill of Rights, and it's illegal. On its face, historically, it should be rescinded because it was not properly ratified by the states, as our Constitution requires in Article 5, that by free elections, there's no doubt about it. They don't intend anybody is held at gunpoint and made to vote one way or another. That is not a free election whatsoever. Well, other elements here of the 14th Amendment, it says the state may not deprive or deny anyone equal protection of the law. And this, of course, prohibits discrimination that would lack a rational basis, and so on. And so, again, forcing the states to comply to a standard that the federal government is imposing upon them. And, of course, it was sold to people as, oh, this is good. These are good moral things that should be done.
Hold that thought right there, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. And, of course, Pastor Whitney is simply pointing out that the Fourth Amendment was never legally ratified, but that didn't change anything. There were people who wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. They sent troops into the South and forced the Southern states and even, to actually go along with this effort to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. But before we go on with our discussion, I want Pastor Whitney to get out his telephone number, his web page, so that our leaders out across America can contact them and perhaps they'll want to they become part of this effort to educate the American people about our magnificent Constitution, and they may even want to get a special training kit from the Institute. So why don't you explain to our listeners what the Institute of the Constitution offers and how people can get hold of it?
We recognized early on that one of the greatest frustrations many patriots have across our country is feeling like, how can we stop this monster federal government? How can we stop these New World Order goons who are stealing our country and violating our rights? And short of taking up arms, what can we do? And the most important thing we can do is restore the republic, and the way to restore the republic is to educate millions of Americans about the true meaning of our Constitution, not the lies they'll hear on the media, not the lies they've been told in school, including law schools. There's almost no law school in our country, with one or two exceptions, that actually teach the original intent of the Constitution. So we recognize that you're not going to get it in the major media, you're not going to get it in the education system. It's got to be a grassroots means. So we put together what we call a host kit. It includes 12 lectures by constitutional law professor John Eidsmo and two lectures by David Barton that explain in detail the history of our country, the Christian heritage, the Christian worldview and beliefs that undergirded what they designed, and then gives you a working knowledge of the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, and then the subsequent amendments, and shows how we have drifted from the biblical absolutes that our founders had in establishing our form of government to the evolutionary relativism of today, and that the way back is to train enough people in these truths and to persuade them that this must be forced upon those who are in office, or they must be replaced, so that we have people in office who will truly uphold the oath to the Constitution as it was originally intended, as it was originally written, not with the revisions and the changes that the Supreme Court has brought about. And if we had people in office who really understood what the Constitution originally meant and were truly brave and bold enough to stand up for that, we could stop the tyrants dead in their tracks. We could put them out of office, put them out of business, and send them where they rightly belong. And to do that, you need to get a host kit. And it's easy to get a host kit, and it's very easy to do it. You're not doing the teaching, just putting in DVDs, or we do have it in VHS format for those, and there's a student notebook that the student follows along the lectures with test questions at the end to see how well they've retained the information. It's a turnkey method by which anybody can take any group of people and communicate these essential truths. And we're encouraged, as churches all over the country are doing this, as individuals just gather people in their living room to do it, and others find a more public facility at City Hall, some places, at libraries, many different opportunities to gather people from your community and communicate these truths. If you want to purchase it through our web store, just go to our website, which is iotconline.com. That website, iotconline.com, and right there at the top of the front page, you'll see Host Kit. Just click on that button, and that'll take you right to ordering a host kit. Or if you want to do it toll-free, making a phone call rather than actually using the online store, call us toll-free at Institute on the Constitution. That number is 866-730-9796. Our toll-free number again is 866-730-9796. And we would encourage every listener, the one thing that you can do to make a difference in stopping the tyranny that's growing in our land and restoring the republic is get a host kit, train yourself, your friends, your neighbors, your fellow churchgoers, the people in your community, teach them these things through using a host kit, and we can all together begin to take back our nation from the tyrants and restore our constitutional republic.
And I think what's really so significant is that this is happening all across America. You're not going to hear about it through the media. Rush Limbaugh's not going to tell you. Brian Williams isn't going to tell you. There's people who are paid so much by the establishment not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth. The people on 60 Minutes or 48 Hours, they're not going to tell you these things. They don't want you to know about the Constitution. They don't want you to know there's a growing awareness of the fraudulent activity and illegal activity and, frankly, treason activity of almost all of our duly elected representatives who've sworn a solemn oath to uphold our Constitution and have been placed there to betray it. But the people are beginning to learn. And when we reach that critical point where enough people understand our Constitution, then perhaps, just perhaps, we can maintain our way of life. Otherwise, of course, the dream that was America will soon become simply a remembrance of things past, a horrible nightmare. Well, let's go ahead, David, and talk a little bit more about the 14th, or are we going right to the 15th Amendment?
Yeah, let me just mention the final elements here of the 14th Amendment, that it really only applies to state governments. It does not specify whether an individual citizen can or cannot discriminate and so on, which means all that took place in the 60s with lunchrooms and things like that, saying these private businesses, that's a violation of the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment that said the states cannot do it. It said nothing about the private individuals. Now, true, individual states could pass all the laws they want that restrict private individuals, but really by doing so, they're stealing people's private property, saying, we're going to tell you what you can do on your property, what you cannot do on your property, which is a violation of our God-given rights. And then finally, it said those who aided the Confederacy may not vote, so it stripped them of citizenship or hold office unless Congress chose to pardon them. And then finally, debts owed to Union soldiers were valid. Debts owed to Confederate soldiers were invalid. So, again, the winners in any war always punish the losers severely, and that Reconstruction era was devastating to those southern states. Well, just a few years later, in 1870, the 15th Amendment was ratified, and this, again, was ratified by state governments that were puppet governments of the radical Republicans in Washington, D.C. These were not independent governments. These were puppet states established by the radical Republicans in D.C. And so you could say the 15th is likewise an invalid ratification process because it wasn't done by freely elected state legislatures. And it says that voting rights of former slaves have to be honored. U.S. citizens, again, this concept that the federal government determines who's a citizen. U.S. citizens may not be deprived of the right to vote because of race, color, or previous servitude. So the federal government is taking to itself that role, that power of determining who is a citizen and who is not. And in that day, it's not nearly as egregious in our own day. We hear about the amnesty bill being proposed. And what if that bill were to pass, what it would tell the state governments of all 50 states is, we're going to tell you that these illegal aliens who broke into your state and who are sitting there illegally today, we're going to tell you that you have to treat them now as citizens. Where the individual states might say, wait a minute, we don't want to reward lawbreakers, we want to punish lawbreakers. The federal government says, no, we're not going to permit you to do that. We're going to force upon you an acceptance of people that you don't want as citizens. We're going to make them citizens in your state. This is, again, this is total tyranny on the part of the federal government, abolishing the power that should be the power of the state to determine who is and who is not a citizen of that particular state. And the ironic thing here is the federal government is hypocritical in all of this, because you say, well, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment was all about abolishing slavery and seeing to it that former slaves were treated fairly and justly and so forth and so on, and that's the righteous interpretation. But you look at the actions of the federal government itself, and the federal government itself was in the business of slavery. You mentioned earlier the draft riots, thousands of people killed who were refusing to become slaves of the federal government. Because what's a draft? A draft is an involuntary form of servitude. You are told, you're going in the Army, boy. Don't matter what you want, whether you want to be in the Army or not in the Army. You are going to be in the Army, and you are going to fight in this war. And if you go AWOL, we'll shoot you. We'll kill you. So as threat of death, you're forced into involuntary servitude. And that's what happened with the tyrant Lincoln, and that's what happened in World War I. There was another draft, in World War II a draft, and Vietnam, and so on. All the drafts that have been conducted in our country are a form of involuntary servitude. And while there isn't a draft today, when I was in high school, I remember, because my brothers, you know, were in the lottery and concerned about where their number was in the draft and all that junk. They ended the draft just before I graduated from high school. And there's rumors that they're going to reinstitute the draft in our day. Why? Because the war in Iraq is obviously very unpopular with many, many Americans, and they cannot recruit enough people for their all, quote-unquote, all-volunteer army, and thus they're threatening not only to impose the draft on young men, but to impose it this time on young women as well. Horror of horrors that they're enslaving both men and women and forcing them to be cannon fodder over there in the Middle East war to expand the empire, not not the not the true American empire, but the new world empire that is completely contrary to our God-given calling as a country and our God-given the protection of our God-given rights. So we have this vast hypocrisy on the part of the federal government forcing the state governments to comply to its edicts regarding slavery and the treatment of former slaves. All the while, the federal government itself is in the biggest business of slavery. There's more slaves that the federal government has had control of than any number of slaves that have ever been in America. Because you combine the slaves from that were forced to fight in the war against Southern independence and First World War and Second World War, those people, were enslaved. But the sad thing is, the American people were lied to and told the patriotic thing, my young man, is to go to war, is to sign up, is to be part of this war effort. When we know that those wars, the war to prevent Southern independence, the First World War and the Second World War, were all machinations of these one world people who want to destroy our form of government and enslave all of us. That's their ultimate goal, to make us all slaves of their new world order. They don't have any love for liberty. They don't want to protect our life, and they certainly want to steal our property. So these tyrants have to be stopped, and they can only be stopped by we, the people, who rise up and say, we will follow the law. It is the supreme law of the land. The U.S. Constitution will put anyone out of office who will not follow the law, and instead we will restore the republic with people who will rule rightly. Well, there was a long pause, and there was attempted amendments. I mentioned the Blaine Amendment attempted in the 1870s and so on, but no amendment succeeded until the 16th Amendment, 1913. And actually, there's a very well-researched book called The Law That Never Was that shows that the ratification of the 16th Amendment was also illegal, that the proper number of states had not ratified the 16th Amendment, that there was fraudulent things taking place, and it was improperly ratified. But let's assume for a moment that it is legitimate, and let's just look at what it says, and we really need to kind of understand the context in which the 16th Amendment and what the original purpose of the 16th Amendment was. You see, in the latter part of the 19th century, there was laws against monopolies, very clear laws preventing monopolies. Well, the powerful people got around those laws against monopoly by forming a trust. And the trust was kind of a way in which to hide their financial activity so that no one would know exactly what's going on, and to accomplish a monopoly just under another cover, a hidden way of accomplishing a monopoly. So there's a great move to bust the trust. And, President Taft ran his campaign against the trust. There was in the 1890s the Sherman Antitrust Act declared illegal all these kind of trusts that were really doing an end run around the monopoly laws, anti-monopoly laws. And Congress got into the act in 1894 and enacted an income tax that imposed a tax on the income of corporations. And the reason was not that the federal government needed any money. In fact, the federal government, the Treasury, had a surplus every year. They had more money than they needed, incredible as that seems to us. So it wasn't a matter of actually providing revenue for the federal government. It was rather to gain information about the financial dealings of these corporations and these trusts in order to bust them, so in order to basically enact the Sherman Antitrust Act. Well, the interesting thing is that the Supreme Court took a look at this law, and the case in 1895 was Pollock v. Farmers and Loan Trust Company, and the United States Supreme Court, it ruled that that law was unconstitutional, and it ruled so because it said the law imposed a tax on income that's derived from property. For example, if you owned rental property and you rented that property out, then that's income from that rental property, and they said, that's illegal. You can't do that. The federal government cannot tax property in that way. They basically went back to the limitations specified in Article 1 in terms of the limitations on the federal government's taxation powers, that the taxation powers of the federal government could not be direct unless on an individual citizen, that the only direct taxes allowed by the Constitution had to be imposed upon the states. In other words, when the federal government wanted to raise revenue, what it would do prior to the 16th Amendment and even subsequent to that for a number of years, it would send the bill to the states. And the states had the bill apportioned to them depending upon the last census. So a state with a large population like California would get a larger tax bill. A state with a least population like Alaska would get a smaller tax bill depending on the population. And this meant that the state legislature had to be the one to raise the revenue that it paid to the federal government. And that was a very, very important check on the power and the growth of the federal government. Reason being is, the state government, and we'll see when we discuss the 17th Amendment, the state government, up to the ratification of the 17th Amendment, had a direct power and control over its senators because the state legislature appointed the senators. They were not elected by the populace. They were appointed by the state legislature, so the state legislature could basically tell their senators what to do and what not to do, and if state senator didn't do it, the state legislature would recall them and replace them with someone who would do the will of the states, because the states were going to have to raise this money. They were going to have to be the bad guys. They were going to have to be the tax collector and defend why they made the decision to support the spending bills that Congress and the Senate ultimately passed.
And so the purpose of the 16th Amendment was really not to tax the individual.
Right.
What was it then?
It was just to tax the corporations.
All right, Brian. See, the public doesn't know that. And of course, you're never going to be told that, but people want to control you. Go ahead, David, pick the story up.
And so when the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional, Congress went back to work and said, well, okay, let's put together an amendment, because they realized, if we just pass this bill, it's declared unconstitutional. We have to pass an amendment to the Constitution giving us permission, therefore, to tax corporations and corporations alone. And the reason we know this is very shortly after the 16th Amendment was, quote-unquote, ratified. And again, as I mentioned, it's very, very suspicious. It probably is not ratified correctly. It's shortly after that. And the Supreme Court in Stanton Independent v. Halbert declared that income tax is an excise tax imposed on activities involving the exercise of a government-granted privilege. Now, you go to work and you earn an income. That's not a government-granted privilege. You have a God-given right to work and a God-given right to earn that income. And therefore, the Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution says, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. In other words, a capitation tax is directly on the head of the individual. You know what decapitation is? It's to take somebody's head off. Well, no capitation, no direct tax was permitted by the federal government on the individual citizens. It was only permitted towards the states, protecting the individuals from the taxing power of the federal government through their state. Their state was a buffer against the federal government, and the state would be a check on the spending of the federal government, because those legislators were going to have to raise that revenue. And if they were the bad guy and said, hey, yeah, well, let's spend $1 billion on this boondoggle project that's a complete waste of money, let's do it anyway. Well, they were going to answer to the people of their state pretty quickly when their time came to be reelected, because they would be burdening the people of their state with this taxation. Once you switch that taxation power to the federal government, which is a misinterpretation of the 16th Amendment, the result is none of us have any say against the IRS. They do whatever they please. And by the way, I am not giving you any tax advice here at all. I'm not telling you what to do with your taxes at all. I'm just telling you the history and the intent of the 16th Amendment. And I believe the best way for us to get back to it would be ultimately to abolish it. But even if we don't unamend this 16th Amendment, if we went back to just the original intent of the 16th Amendment, the IRS would be abolished and it would be off the back of every American and out of our lives.
Hey, we're out of time, David, but okay. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again.
God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Well, David, are you still there? Well, I guess we lost David, but the telephone number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And the The webpage is www.iotconline.com. That's www.iotconline.com. We certainly recommend the organization to you. We have, of course, a four-tape set on the foundations of our freedom. These are just audio interviews, CD interviews, if you'd like them, to understand our Constitution. If we ever hope to be able to reclaim it, we must certainly understand it. So I commend the work of the Institute to you. We have a great deal of information through Radio Liberty. I think one of the best books we carry is Betrayed by the Bench, written by John Stormer, that goes into the Declaration of Independence, which was the Articles of Incorporation of our nation, and it was based upon that that the Constitution was ultimately written and ratified to preserve our God-given rights that limited the power of government and made us free. And we also carry, I think, a few copies yet of Phyllis Schlafly's book, The Supremacist, but you need to get this information. We have another book called The Wall of Separation. Just goes into this wall of separation between church and state. Go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and look at the various items that we have there. We'll give you the understanding and where you can get information to understand our magnificent form of government, which we either reclaim or we lose. Which do you want? Do you have any idea what it would be like to live without freedom? I will tell you, I know an awful lot of people here who, in this country, who have come from other countries who value their freedom here far more than people who have been born in this country. We must take America back. But to do it, we must understand the spiritual forces which are working to destroy this nation, because the reason, of course, we're in trouble today is because for well over 100 years there's been a small group of powerful people who've controlled our government. How could they exist for 100 years? Why, because there's a spiritual force behind them. And that, of course, energizes these wicked people and rewards these wicked people and, of course, blinds the public. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. Why you need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret. Why you need to read the pamphlet set we put together called The Occult Hierarchy. It's three pamphlets based upon newsletters we've written. Nothing quite like it, because much of the material actually are not things I wrote, but things that were actually written by people who were associated with the other dimension, who were in contact with the beings from the other dimension, who have an agenda, a one-world government, a one-world religion, and certainly a one-world ruler. So that's the pamphlets, inexpensive, on the occult hierarchy, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk on the forbidden agenda, and then, of course, we recommend Chris Pinto's wonderful award-winning films, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and his award-winning film, Riddles in Stone. And then either the DVD or video, which Chris Pinto had actually, the talk he'd given, The Atlantis Connection. What is the Atlantis Connection? It is the age-old belief going back literally thousands of years that one day lost Atlantis would be reformed, and then, of course, the belief in, half a millennia ago that here on the North American continent they would form the new Atlantis. And then eventually that America would lead the world into the new world order. And that's why, of course, the architecture of our nation's capital was laid out as it was. And the idea of the manifest destiny, of the secret destiny of America, that's why we're fighting in the Near East today and the Middle East, and why we'll soon be at war with Iran. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest for this hour is Brad Friedman, and of course Brad is working in the issue of voting. And as you know, if you've listened to our programs before, there's no question that the election in 2004 was fraudulent. John Kerry knew that, but John Kerry came from the same secret society as George Bush, and I'm sure he was told what to do. He had, I think, $15 million or more in his war chest at the end of the campaign. He could have challenged the 2004 elections, but the people who run the world wanted George Bush there to be the president. Elected in 2004, there was a fraudulent election in Ohio. In fact, one of the voting machines there in a precinct with 800 people registered to vote came up with 4,000 votes for George Bush. And they had an explanation. They said, of course, well, the machine had a hiccup. Machines have hiccups all the time. And that's why you've got 4,000 votes for George Bush. And that doesn't mean there's anything fraudulent about the elections. And, of course, a couple of the people from Ohio have actually gone to prison for fraud associated with that election. And most people have never heard the truth about what happened there or the truth about what's going on across America. So Brad's on the front lines, and it's always good to hear from him. Hi, Brad. Tell us where we're going, what's going on.
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you? Coming to you tonight from Houston, Texas, actually.
Hey, good to have you.
And hiccups, indeed. Hiccups, snags, glitches, anything but just poorly run elections that people don't seem to give a damn about. Electoral democracy just seems to be on the back burner for everyone, and everyone except you, frankly, and thank you for staying on this topic. You know, usually I look forward as much as I can to try to clean up this system that we have at this point, and we've got some news in that regard, but before we look forward, a new story out today, an exclusive at bradblog.com, speaking of the election 2004, find some pretty extraordinary and, as far as I can tell, obvious fraud that occurred in the 2004 election that a guest blogger, John Washburn, at Brad Blog Today, revealed, and that he found in about 5 minutes once he was finally given the records to this election. This is from the presidential election going back to 2004. He's been trying to get those presidential those records now from that election since April of 2005, and he was told he could not have them because there was an investigation of the election in Milwaukee, and in fact, the U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic was on that task force, and therefore, since they were looking at the election, he was not allowed to have those records. Well, here we are. What are we? 2-3 years later at this point. He's finally given these records that theoretically have been gone over by this task force. And what does he find in ward number one out of 314 wards in Milwaukee? The first one he looks at, this is incredible, and folks, when they get the chance, should go to look at the graphic because we've got the records on this posted at bradblog.com. The very first ward he looks at, he sees four signatures on the end of the day, the poll tape, you know, that they sign when they turn in what happened there. The signatures are Jane Doe, Joe Doe, Susan Smith, and Jane Smith, and they're all in the same handwriting. And furthermore, the totals of how many people actually voted versus how many are written onto that statement are off by at least 200, 300, 400, depending on what numbers you use. Now, you know, this is only one precinct. It was the first one that he looked at in Milwaukee, but it begs the question, what the hell have they been looking at for the past 3 years when supposedly this Bush Justice Department was supposedly looking at these records, looking at this election? And, you know, Stan, when you look at this thing, and like I say, you can see it online, I mean, it is so such an obvious forgery. All four of the signatures on this inspector's report are clearly written by the same person, and Joe Doe, Jane Doe, Susan Smith, give me a break. It's incredible, and it's incredible that nobody found it. But this is what our electoral system is like. This is what our election officials are doing. And frankly, Dan, this is why I'm fighting for what I'm fighting for, to get rid of these damn touchscreen machines so that we can have citizen oversight, so citizens can actually go back, look at the reports, and look at the ballots. Because with this disparity of how many different numbers of ballots there should be, somewhere right now, in theory, there is a bag from Ward 1 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin's 2004 presidential election, a bag holding the ballots from that election. We ought to be able to open it up, count them, and find out how many are really there, or whether or not this ballot box was stuffed with hundreds of extra ballots. And that is only one ward out of 314 in the city of Milwaukee.
Well, you know, Brad, the reason I stick with this is because I think America's worthwhile trying to save it. We cannot possibly hope to save it if we don't have fair elections. And we don't have fair elections where we have electronic voting machines, because these things can be rigged. I believe in many instances, in most instances, they are rigged. Because, of course, whoever wins the election gets the power, and it's all about power. And I don't care whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. It's all about power, and power corrupts absolutely everyone. So I'll pick up the story anyway. Of course, I'm sure they're going to go through all the rest of the precincts there in Milwaukee. And I would think that whoever has gone over this, those forms so far, should be, held responsible for fraud themselves. Because if you're covering up a fraud, you're equally guilty to the people who committed the fraud.
Well, I agree, and I suspect I don't care which party is doing it. Democracy needs to be sacred, because that's all we've got. At the end of the day, that is all we got. And when you're looking at what's going on, for example, with this administration, and how brutally inept and filthy, dirty they are, the one thing you have at the end of the day is that ballot box. When that disappears, what do you have, Stan? Nothing. And that's why this is the issue that underscores all of the others. You can spend all the time you want. You can spend hours talking about, well, what do we do in Iraq? What do we do with health care, Social Security, and so forth? But if we can't get this one right, and if we can't allow for oversight...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back with Brad. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman. He's on the front lines of this battle. Certainly, I believe God has picked people, and their job is to look at one issue. And Brad's issue is the elections, the fraudulent elections in 2004. And the more you look into them, the more you realize that everybody was cheating. Most people get away with cheating. There were a couple of people who went to prison in Ohio. In fact, in some of the precincts that went most heavily for Bush, they were fraudulent. But the average American has never heard what they did, how they fixed that election. But remember, if they can fix that election, they can fix every election. So if we really value our freedom, if we want to preserve our way of life, then we're going to have to, get involved. And Brad's on the front line. He's got all sorts of great information. You can go to his website. We'll tell you more about that just a little bit later. But go right ahead, Brad.
Yeah, you underscore it perfectly. I think we've become complacent in this country. We think, it's the greatest country on earth. We would never steal elections. Well, we have, you and I have talked about, a rich history in this country of stolen elections. And, we have to suspect, when there is the kind of money that is on the line, that people are going to try to do this. But we've sat back. We've gotten complacent and comfortable. We presume that the corporate mainstream media is going to report if there's any funny business. We know they don't. And then we rely on elections officials and that same media to let us know when there is a problem. Well, the elections officials aren't going to let us know that there's a problem. We have learned that much. The media is not going to let us know when there's a problem. It really is up to people, and people all over the country. The reports that I run, at Brad Blog, are really because we've got this ragtag band of citizen patriots, you know, who make public records requests to look at these records, who, you know, go to these election offices and ask them about their procedures. And that is the transparency that begins to disappear, and it's disappearing at an incredible rate when we go to these electronic voting systems where no human being can actually see what the hell is going on inside of these machines. And these companies, these private companies, have been given dispensation to keep their, you know, their software a secret and to keep the people out of the elections. This is very much, you know, an of the people, by the people, for the people situation. Nothing is more so than that, and our elections. And the people really do include, Stan, you and I, and the people who, you know, show up to be poll workers and so forth each year. These are the people. And if we are not vigilant about our democracy, it will be gone altogether if it is not already. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, fighting for the changes to the election legislation that I'm doing. And finally, by the way, Democrats have brought some legislation to Congress now that they're in power. But guess what? They're screwing it up. And we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, this report out of Milwaukee is simply extraordinary, given that it was being theoretically investigated for 2 years. And as soon as you open up this very first precinct, once we finally did get the record years later, it is such an obvious forgery. We've clearly got a problem there. Where the hell was the U.S. attorney that was assigned to the task force to look at this? I'll toss in that this U.S. attorney, Stephen Biskupic, was one of the folks who was reportedly on the purge list from the Department of Justice. And at some point, while he was supposed to be fired, at some point he was removed from that purge list, we're told. And the question now is, why? What did he do? Did he, you know, determine he would be a loyal Bushy, that he would overlook this sort of a blatant election fraud in Milwaukee? You know, this is the problem that we run into, and that we find in this U.S. attorney purge, is that it puts in question now everything that happens around the country. You know, this is a grave threat, and I think if you look at cable news, it's remarkable how little news they actually report. I would suggest that this country is in a very precarious place, and I don't know where this all goes from here, but we, the people, have got to do something about it.
That is really amazing, you know, whether, of course, they want to focus our attention on Paris Hilton, but, of course, ignore the really important stories that really have significance, and focus our attention on who Brad Pitt is seeing at the present time. If he's still with his current girlfriend, is he going to marry her? My goodness, we understand they have prenuptial agreement. Now that the child is getting on about 6 months, 8 months of age, they're even thinking about getting married. Isn't that wonderful? And why don't we talk about the issues that really have eternal significance, like, of course, the fraudulent elections? Why don't we talk about the coming war with Iran? Why don't we talk about the billions of dollars that keep disappearing over in Iraq, or why we don't have adequate, you know, military supplies? 4 years into this war, we still don't have adequate military supplies to protect the lives of our boys over there. But, of course, they're going to do something about that one of these days.
Yeah.
And so, but I think Brad's absolutely right. What we need to do is focus on, first of all, how do we get responsible people into government? And if you're going to have rigged elections, why, of course, you're not going to be able to. What's happening in California? Is our Secretary of State really going to do anything about these fixed electronic voting machines that anybody can get any sort of election on, any sort of result they want to?
Well, I'll tell you, I will certainly, for now, give her the benefit of the doubt. She ran a very hard campaign based solely on cleaning up this election system and these voting machines in California, or as Diebold, the Diebold company, one of the biggest voting machine companies out there, calls California the world's largest voting market. That's how they see California. But yes, she has begun a top-to-bottom review, as she promised, of every electronic voting system that is certified in the state of California. And the findings, when they come out, could be frankly an earthquake around the country, depending on what it is that she finds, because she is, for the first time, doing this top-to-bottom review that includes hacking tests, so-called red team attacks, vulnerability testing that has never been done before. You know, people think that, oh, these systems are tested. The fact of the matter is, nobody tests them, not at the federal level, not at the state level. This is the first time that actual independent investigators are looking at the hardware and the software, and what they're trying to do is hack them. The same thing that you and I have been claiming is possible for years, they're actually going to get the opportunity to try that and report back independently as far as what they find. Now, those findings are due, I believe it's August 3rd, I believe, is when the findings are due. And frankly, having taken a look at the list of voting systems that they're going to be testing, I don't see how they're going to find any of those machines that aren't hackable. Well, then what do you do? Does Deborah Bowen, the Secretary of State, declare every voting system in California is now decertified? Well, she might, but we have elections coming up now in February, since they moved this primary ridiculously early out there in California. Got to vote on something. Is she going to declare the whole state goes back to hand-counted paper ballots? Is she going to put in special security mitigation procedures and require paper ballots with optical scan systems, get rid of the touchscreen DRE systems altogether? Right now, it's really anybody's guess. She's staying quite mum. I know a lot of the different computer experts and so forth who are working and doing this testing, but they have been told for the moment to keep quiet until their testing is done. So, boy, Stan, it's it's really anybody's guess as to what we're going to come out with at the end of, at the beginning of August. And then as they race to try and get some systems in place that we can sort of trust in time for the February primary elections in California.
Well, I thought I just watched From Freedom to Fascism, Aaron Russo's film, about a week ago. And there, of course, they had the gentleman testifying before Congress. And he's just saying that he was asked to write a program either where they could hack into this machine and fix the elections. And he said, of course you can do this sort of thing. And, you know, I think it's about time the American people understand that there are programs that you can actually fix the elections. Now, I remember back the elections of 2000. And what did we hear about? Hanging chads, hanging chads, hanging chads, hanging chads. And I'm saying, why are they talking about the hanging chads? You know, this is not that much of a problem. There's always been this sort of thing. If you have a hanging chad, there's no question somebody punched it out because that's they wanted the election to go. But that was all designed for the impact on the minds of the American people. So we'd go along with these electronic voting machines, which, of course, would be totally fixable. At least the hanging chads, you had a permanent record. With, of course, the electronic voting machines, you have no record on most of them. And what a wonderful way to give the impression of free elections. Well, of course, everything's fraudulent.
Well, that's right. And look, going back to Florida 2000, you hit the nail right on the head, Stan. They were fighting about the hanging chads. At least they had something to fight about. And, you know, I want to remind folks, the problem in 2000 was not the hanging chads. The problem was counting the ballots. Frankly, the Bush administration went to the Supreme Court to demand that the ballots not be counted. They've got folks in there who can, fight about vote from both parties, which ballot this vote should go for and so forth. But they did not want to count them at all. But at least we had something to count back then. That is rapidly disappearing.
And I think the amazing thing is, of course, the Supreme Court had no right to make any decision. Whether you got corruption at the state doesn't matter. I mean, why would you think you wouldn't have as much corruption at the federal government as at the state? I mean, I'd far rather have, you know, state governments where there might be less corruption. All you need is corruption at the federal government. What rights do the people have? And, of course, if you read the Constitution, they had no right to go to the federal government. But that's all right. They did it anyway. We'll pick the story up there.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned the film with the programmer testifying before Congress. That was actually Clint Curtis,
right?
A computer software programmer from Florida, and I was somewhat responsible for him being there that day. I had broken his story at bradblog.com just days before those hearings, and in fact, as you suggested, what he showed was that, you know, how easy it is to hack these systems, and whether it is hacked or not, the bottom line is they can be. And what he showed is that you can walk up to a touchscreen voting system if you happen to know where the so-called invisible buttons are on that screen. Why, you can flip the votes to anything you want. Nobody could ever catch it. And in that case, he claims that he was asked by a Republican, actually the head of Florida's back in 2000, the head of the Florida House at the time, the House Speaker, Tom Feeney, who now sits in the U.S. House on the U.S. Judiciary Committee, incredibly enough. He claims that he was asked by Tom Feeney back when he was Speaker of the Florida House, when this fellow, Clint Curtis, actually worked with Tom Feeney at a software firm called Yang Enterprises, Inc., where Feeney, one of the most powerful and yet dirtiest men in Florida, frankly, he was Speaker of the House, at the same time a registered lobbyist, believe it or not, for this software firm that had business with the state. Go figure. That's a dirty system. But, you know, here's his testimony. Here is Clint Curtis right before your very eyes, telling exactly what happened, telling it to the Democrats on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee just after the 2004 election, because the Republicans refused at that point to have any hearings on these on the election at all. So this thing gets worse, and the Democrats at that time really had no power. They had to have their own hearings, and you know, very few folks in the media covered it. So this thing goes on and on. It gets worse and worse. And now with the Democrats finally in power, they have put forward an election reform bill in the House. It looked to be a good bill, but it too became so compromised throughout the process and throughout the committee, you know, going to committee and the amendments and the markups that happened to it. And in fact, a bill that had originally called for the complete disclosure of all source code and software used in voting systems to anybody in the public who wished to look at it, by the time it got out of committee, the software was required to go into secret escrow. It could only be looked at after an election if a problem was discovered, and it could only be looked at by so-called experts who would then be forced to sign non-disclosure agreements. Well, so much for transparency. And if you look again what we were talking about earlier, if you look back at Milwaukee, well, we had experts who looked at that Milwaukee election for 2 years, yet they weren't able to look at a single report from the polling place, the closing night's report, and see what was so obviously a forgery. That's why you can't rely on experts or anyone else. That's why you need this entire system to be open and transparent. And frankly, what is the problem with that? What is the secret? What's the secret to this software? We're talking about adding 1 + 1 + 1. It's not a real sophisticated and difficult computer program.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back, Brad. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're simply talking about the fact that there's been testimony before the before Congress and the Senate, but of course, nothing came out of it. But of course, by a gentleman who claims he was actually asked to write a software program that would allow them to be able to fix Florida elections. His name is Curtis. We've actually interviewed him. Brad was instrumental in having him actually testify before this Senate committee or House committee. And, of course, you can actually see this, where this is recorded in the film From Freedom to Fascism by Aaron Russo.
Indeed, and I will point folks for more details on the Clint Curtis story, because I've been telling it now for, we're going on 3 years at this point.
Right.
If you go to bradblog.com/Clint Curtis, you'll be able to see even more of that video than you'll see in the film.
and, of course, all the backstory on this extraordinary story. And I should add, by the way, Clint Curtis ended up running for Congress last year in 2006 against that same congressman who he claims had asked him to create this vote-rigging software. And, well, what do you know? He did not win, according to the voting machines that they used down there in the 24th District of Florida. But when Clint Curtis then suspected something was up, because just a week before the election, a Zogby poll had showed them to be in a dead heat, and yet he ended up losing by, I don't know, 18 points or something on these paperless touchscreen voting machines, he went out door-to-door with volunteers, and they took affidavits from voters and asked them, how did you vote? And what do you know? They found anywhere from 12 to 24% higher Democratic turnout than what had come back in the results of this of the election, as reported by the state of Florida. When this was then given to Congress and he contested the election, Congress, in its infinite wisdom, the House Administration Committee, headed by Democrats, by the way, threw it out entirely. They said, oh, there's no case here. We can't look at these hundreds and hundreds of affidavits that you have because we have a secret ballot system. And therefore, even though someone has signed an affidavit under, you know, penalty of perjury and jail time, we can't be sure they're telling the truth. So we're not even going to look at the evidence. Case closed. They threw it out. So, you know, you're not allowed to, in Florida, in this case, you didn't have any paper trails, you didn't have any paper ballots, none of those were allowed, you're not allowed affidavits from voters. I mean, what the hell are you supposed to do to try to, you know, ensure any kind of election integrity? The good news, and let's give some good news here for
all right, well, let's hear some good news, Brad. I should like to hear it.
We could use some, couldn't we? The good news is that the new governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, who's also a Republican, by the way, he came in. One of the first things he did in office is said, look, enough is enough. We've got to get rid of these touchscreen voting machines. Florida has been an embarrassment for years. They had a disastrous 2006 election, which there is still a fight about, by the way, and we're going to hear details about that, I believe, next week from the GAO. But he came in and said, let's get rid of these things once and for all. And he was able to get the Republican Senate and the Republican House in Florida to outlaw, to ban, these direct recording electronic touchscreen voting machines in the state of Florida once and for all. That's good. That's very good news, in fact. And, boy, it sure would be nice to see them in the other 40, see that same thing in the other 49 states at this rate.
Well, we do have some honest politicians out there. We do have some people who believe in the system, and we need to applaud them and support them in any way we can. We still have the framework of a free nation. But if we don't reclaim it, believe me, there are people there working like thieves at night, doing everything they can to manipulate the system and to cheat on the system, because chances are they're never going to get caught. And the rewards in politics are phenomenal. I mean, Lyndon Johnson had to borrow money to actually go to Washington, D.C. when he was a congressman. When he left Washington, D.C., he was one of the richest men in Texas on a congressman and then a senator's and the president's salary. How did he do that? Well, his wife is a very good investor, almost as good as Hillary Clinton when she was playing the commodities and won every time. Isn't that amazing? Made $100,000 in just a matter of a week or two playing commodities with absolutely no experience. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is how the game is really played. Our guest this evening is Brad Friedman. Understand that freedom is lost when good people aren't involved. The power and government, of course, will corrupt anybody and literally everybody. In Washington, D.C. today, we have some of the finest politicians that money can buy. It's time, if you really care about freedom, you took America back. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Brad Friedman. So, Brad, pick up the story. Well, I'm glad to hear about Florida. I really am, and I think that we should applaud the Republican governor down there for doing what was right. And remember, of course, we placed another Republican whose name was Jeb Bush. I wonder if that played any part in the fact that they rigged the election so that George W. Bush, the son of George Herbert W. Bush, could win the election there in 2000 and 2004. But at least Jeb hopefully will remain retired, although there's some people want to run him for president. Let's hope that never happens.
Yeah.
Go ahead there.
You know, well, of course, that was just a coincidence that Florida gave the the election to George Bush when his brother happened to run the place. It's really been remarkable, frankly, since Charlie Crist has come to power down there, how things have begun to change. You know, this was a state that after 2000 had actually implemented a law. The House and the Senate was just horrible in Florida. It still ain't that great, but frankly, Crist is hopefully leading things in the right direction a little bit. But this is a state after the 2000 election that actually implemented a law that made it illegal to look, to even examine a paper ballot once that ballot had been counted by a machine. So even if you had a question about an election, you were not by law allowed to look at the ballot, if you can imagine that, after it had already been counted by hand, by a machine. That's how bad it had gotten in the state of Florida. Things are hopefully beginning to turn around. You know, it's Florida, so don't be too sure about anything. But it is at least a move in the right direction. Another state that made a move in the right direction was the state of New Mexico. And again, they only made it after 2004 and after they had so many problems and anomalies in the 2004 election. And Governor Bill Richardson down there signed a bill that, again, outlawed the DRE touchscreen voting machines. They had a debate tonight on CNN, a YouTube debate, and someone had asked a question about this, and at least Bill Richardson stood up and said that we need a paper ballot. You know, I wish the rest of the candidates on both sides of the aisle were talking about it. They're not even talking about democracy, but one of the reasons is I think the media is not bothering to ask them about democracy. It's just not on the radar. Incredibly, despite what we see, despite what we see, election after election.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Brad Friedman, and he's pointing out that not only has Sydney, Florida done away with the voting machines, electronic voting machines, but so has New Mexico, and Bill Richardson, the governor of the state of New Mexico, is not one of my favorite people, but he actually got rid of those electronic voting machines, and we should applaud him for it. Now, before we go on, Brad, I want you to get your websites out and how people can get in touch with you.
All right. Well, you have to get involved, and one of the best ways you can do that is to become educated. And to do that, please stop by bradblog.com, where we're reporting on these matters every day and telling some extraordinary stories that you're just not going to hear anywhere else. That's bradblog.com. As well, join up on the mailing list over at velvetrevolution.us, where we're trying to help organize the people before, during, and after elections so that they can show up and be the media, be the police, be the government, be everybody that they need to be in order to make sure that there's transparency and that our elections are as legitimate as they possibly can be. So we hope you will join that ragtag army of patriots over at velvetrevolution.us. We're fighting the bad guys and fighting to keep the elections clean.
Well, I will tell you that Brad is on the front lines of this. He's given himself full time to this activity. He's traveling now to various cities trying to get the information out. He deserves your support, and if you can help him financially, I'm sure he can appreciate it. And I think all of us who are on the front lines of this battle need financial help, but those who are doing, you know, the best that they can, and there's nobody else out there who is really getting information out the way that Brad is, or the people working in Sydney, that he'll be congratulated. But certainly we get Brad's emails on a regular basis, and he keeps me up to date on what's going on, and so I can keep you out there across America up to date on what's going on. And unless we get rid of these electronic voting machines, unless we get back to a paper trail that we can follow and check, unless we get integrity in government, unless we get people in America to believe that there is a right and there is a wrong, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether you like a candidate or not, if you're going to have an election, you have to have a fair election. And, you know, I don't know how you feel about George Bush and John Kerry. In 2004, I didn't like either one of them. I didn't vote for either one of them because I believe they were both crooks. Well, I believe that John Kerry won that election. The exit polls showed he won that election. And to show you how fraudulent it was, John Kerry didn't even really try to do a recount there, which shows that the thing is really all fixed by the guys who worked behind the veil in the smoke-filled rooms of really making the decisions that, of course, the elected candidates simply carry out. Well, Brad, any other states where things are looking up?
Well, and by the way, thank you, bless you, Stan, for mentioning that about Brad Blog. We have no corporate sponsorship. We really do rely on the people to support us, so thank you for that. In other good news stories, I'll give you a couple actually out of California over the past week or so. Some pretty extraordinary stories. Going back, it was just about a week or so ago, got a favorable decision, that could set a precedent around the country. Got a favorable decision in Alameda County, California.
Of all places, Alameda County.
Of all places, indeed, which is, Berkeley, Oakland, that area. An election, again, from 2004 had been challenged. A recount had been asked for on the touchscreen voting systems that they had used at the time, the Diebold touchscreen voting systems. The elections officials there, the county elections officials, had stalled and stalled, would not give the plaintiffs the records and so forth that they had requested, that they're allowed by law. And as it turned out, about a year or so later, we found out that the voting machines that they had used, the county had gotten rid of them, had sent them back to Texas. All of the election records that were on them had been overwritten. 96% of the election records had been completely overwritten. And finally, we had a judge do the right thing, because we see very few judges. You know, these judges don't like to get in the middle of these election contests at all. They look for any reason to dismiss the case. Well, this one they didn't dismiss because they realized all the records were gone, and they actually, it may be the first time in the country, have called for a revote on this particular. It was a ballot measure up there in Alameda County, and the judge has now ordered a revote to take place at the next either primary or general election now in 2008, I believe. We're talking about a four-year-old case, Stan. And this is yet another reason why these electronic touchscreen voting machines are a no-go, because if there's a contest, if there's any question, the machines themselves become evidence in the election, and sometimes these things take years to settle, and you cannot, you can't use those machines again. If you have a paper ballot system, and that's one thing I want to correct you about, Dan, you had mentioned we need a paper trail. We don't need a paper trail. We need a paper ballot for every vote cast.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
If you have a paper ballot, then you can go back and you can count the ballots. You can fight about them. You can, you know, see if anybody stuffed it or anything else. But when the machine itself is the paper trail, you know, you can't use those machines again. And that's what they did in this case. And so the judge... courageous judge, frankly, called for a revote, and this almost never happens, but it sent a very clear message to counties out there to think twice about using this type of machine. another good news story I'll give you, down also in California, down in Riverside County, California. I don't know if you may have been following this. An extraordinary story. Riverside County is the first county in America to go to touchscreen voting machines. And you've got election integrity advocates that have been down there fighting for transparency, showing up week in and week out at the Board of Supervisors, you know, meetings to take their 2 minutes of public testimony to, you know, talk about how unhappy they are with this system. Excuse me. And finally, just to get these folks off their back for the most part, the Board of Supervisors, which loves these touchscreen machines, they said, okay, fine, we'll put together our own hand-picked blue ribbon commission to take a look at your complaints and take a look at these machines and so forth. Well, everyone thought this was going to be a whitewash, of course, because they were, you know, it was a hand-picked by the Board of Supervisors who loved these machines. Well, guess what? You know, they presented their information to this blue ribbon commission. They studied the matter for about 3 months. They came back just last week with their recommendations. And the top two recommendations, get rid of the touchscreen voting machines as soon as possible. And until you can, make sure every voter in Riverside County gets the option to vote on a paper ballot. Now, this was their, you know, the Board of Supervisors, their own hand-picked commission. So we were, you know, ready for them to say, oh, everything is great in Riverside. But they, you know, took an honest look at it, and this is what they found. This is the same Riverside County where you had a Board of Supervisors, one of the fellows by the name of Jeff Stone, who had challenged these election integrity folks 1,000-1 that they couldn't come in and manipulate the voting machines. They said, oh, yeah, we'll be happy to. And, of course, they brought in one of the best hackers in the world, and the Board of Supervisors said, never mind, we'll make a blue ribbon commission instead. So it's really an incredible story.
The thing is, Brad, that the majority of the American people are good people. The vast majority of American people, we may be right, we may be left, we may be Republicans, we may be Democrats, we may be conservatives or liberals. There are not very many people on the other side who are just totally corrupt or simply part of this cabal that's running things. And so, I mean, the fact that they could have a blue ribbon committee that appointed, obviously, where they hoped nothing would happen, and then come back with a favorable position as far as what you and I believe. This is extremely encouraging, and we've seen these same sort of things happening all across the country. The trouble is, we're not hearing about it through the major controlled media, because the last thing that people who control the media want is for the American people to realize that our votes are fraudulent.
Well, that's right, and this is the good news of the Riverside story. Let me give you very quickly what we'll call the bad news that happened just 2 days ago. The Blue Ribbon Commission presented their findings to the Board of Supervisors, who was stunned because, you know, they love their machines. The machines, by the way, that put them in power, I should add. And so they said, well, thank you very much for this report, Blue Ribbon Commission. We are going to form a new commission to look at the commission's report. And this time, we're going to have members of the Board of Supervisors on that commission. Nobody from the Blue Ribbon panel is going to be on that commission. And when, as a matter of fact, when they tried to put three members of the Board of Supervisors on that commission, they realized, oh, wait, that's, if we do that, if you ever have three members of the Board of Supervisors meeting at the same time, then it's open to the Sunshine Laws, and it becomes a public meeting that they have to invite people to. So they decided, oh, wait, we'll just put two people from the Board of Supervisors on this commission to look at the commission's findings so that we can meet in secret and we don't have to invite anybody. So, Stan, the whitewash may still be on. It seems that these guys are going to do anything and everything they can to fight for these, for the very machines that kept them in power, so that they can continue to ignore the people.
Well, all we can do, Brad, is just keep plugging along, because we're right, they're wrong, because we got right on our side, and hopefully down the line, the people, enough people are going to get up in arms that, of course, they're going to say, we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to take it anymore. And they're going to be out standing on the street corners yelling that at the top of their lungs. When there are enough people there, we'll have a great chorus, and who knows what may happen. Anyway, Any more stories you want to tell us? Or sure. Well, let's go ahead and open up the lines here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Brad, he is certainly the most knowledgeable person that I know on the subject of fraudulent voting in America. And at one time, I really wasn't too favorable towards this position, but I'll have to admit that as I've seen what's going on, increasingly I've come to realize that they do fix our elections. Certainly they, and there's no sense voting in a fraudulent election. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be voting. It means we should be looking after the elections and of course, checking and demanding that we have, I would use your terminology, paper ballots rather than a paper trail. Our telephone again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, what sort of response are you getting as you go around the country telling people how they're fixing our elections?
Well, it's interesting because I try to reach out and I try to, meet with people who don't necessarily agree with me. I want to find out why it is that they don't, how it is they can hang on to these systems that we know just don't work, whether someone defrauds them or whether they just break down and voters can't show up and vote. I went to an interesting meeting in Nashville, Tennessee with some an election commission meeting down there, and it was interesting. It was a majority Democrat meeting. You had three Democrats and two Republicans. So a Democrat chaired the meeting. He spoke. The other two Democrats didn't speak, but the Republicans, boy oh boy, did they speak up. They had a lot to say. They've been talking to me via email ever since. They feel that, incredibly, that paper ballots, this is a direct quote, are the greatest fraud that has ever been perpetrated on America. They love their voting machines. They don't want to hear anything about the evidence, and as you know, because you weren't sure about this either, but the more you look at it, the mountain of evidence that keeps coming out showing that these damn things don't work, you can't deny it. But they wanted to, sort of stay in their, with their blinders on. Is it because they want to throw elections, or is it because they just don't want to look at what is out there? I don't know. So I get interesting responses from folks like that, and I have to make my case to them. I have to make my case that it's not about Republican or Democrat or left or right. I'm here in Texas, and I met with some Democrats actually this week, and I told them, look, you had a Republican conservative Supreme Court justice who ran in the primaries in 2006, a Republican primary. And in one county, Winkler County, Texas, the county that he had previously won by 68% in 2004, he had won it by 74% in 2002. This year, he lost it by 100%, Stan. He received zero votes. You think we got a problem there?
If you had a suspicious mind, you might think that. So, how could you have no votes at all?
Yeah, and no votes at all. 100% lost. In another county, Tarrant County, Texas, 100,000 votes showed up out of nowhere. The voting machine company said, oops, our bad. It was just a mistake. We've got it all fixed now. Everything is fine. And, of course, the county and the state is still using the voting machines, the same systems, even after a disaster like that. What does it take to get through to these people, Stan?
Well, let's find out. Let's go to Daniel, who's calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Daniel. How you doing? Have a question?
Good, Dr. Stan. Yeah, the best solution that I've found, because the last election I voted in, I moved to L.A. County, and I didn't know they had the new touchscreen voting machines, and then I kind of thought they might, so I requested a absentee ballot so I would have a paper record, because in Orange County, which is south of Los Angeles County, they had the electric voting machines, and there was no paper trail. And I asked them, I said, hey, don't I get a receipt? And they're like, no, it's recorded. And so that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So this last election, I was able to have that, but still, they had all the touchscreen voting machines.
Well, Daniel, what you got to do is help. start talking to people. Explain the sorts of things that Brad's been talking about. Get them to go to bradblog.com, bradblog.com, or Velvet Revolution US, velvetrevolution.us. We need your help to get the information out. And we need enough people who value freedom, who are willing to take a stand. Hey, we're going to have to let you go because we got some other callers. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Well, the simplest thing is we should all immediately is request that, use the absentee ballots and have the paper trail.
Yeah, but we got to get do away with those machines because still they can come up with all the votes they want to those machines and just undo the value of paper ballot.
Judicial Watch or the Rutherford Institute, there should be some legal organizations that we could bring to bear spotlight on this in action in court. And we need more judges to enforce the law. It's a law enforcement problem. That's, you know, all of our problems are we're not enforcing the Constitution as the law of the land.
And I should add, in California, every voter has the right to ask to vote on a paper ballot, even on Election Day.
Okay. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Jack. Jack, did you have a question for our guest?
Indeed, Dr. Stan. Before I ask that question, I watched a documentary a couple years ago, Orwell Rose in His Grave. And I just wanted to direct Brad's attention to that because in that documentary, Charles Lewis, who was a investigative journalist producer for 60 Minutes, terminated his association because he said 60 Minutes, every time he wanted to investigate a key issue, they would suppress it. Well, in the same documentary, they showed the FCC commission, I think it was 2002, where Colin Powell's son was the chairman, the swing vote, wherein they allowed, and as Michael Powell said, the only free speech rights that are of any concern to him as FCC chairman are those of the major corporations, the major communication corporations. So he voted to allow deregulation and a corporate media monopoly takeover. And I think it's those same entities that are pushing these electronic voting machines. Now, in Ohio...
We're out of time, Jack, but thanks so very much, and I share your concern. And so right now, of course, our guest this evening has been Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That's bradblog.com. Do you have a parting thought for us before we let you go, Brad?
The caller who refers to Orwell rolling over in his grave, it's an apt description, given that the nightmare that we that has put these voting machines, these electronic voting machines, now all over the country, is a friendly little act called the Help America Vote Act.
Isn't that nice?
An Orwellian name, if ever I heard it, because it has caused an absolute disaster around the country. And the only thing that is now going to make a difference is Americans, as you say, standing up, making noise, educating themselves and passing on stories, whether you read it at Brad Blog or other places that report on this information, blackboxvoting.org and so forth. Make noise yourself, be the media, and become involved in your electoral system as a poll worker, write letters to the editor, and frankly, when you see these presidential candidates come into your town over the next year, ask them, will they demand a paper ballot for every vote cast in America? Because that is the only chance we have, as I see it, of saving democracy.
Amen to that. Thank you for everything you're doing, and please keep us posted. If I don't call you, why you give me a call? Bye-bye.
Thank you, my friend.
God bless. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and it's a very important issue. You need to understand what's going on. They're stealing the elections, but why should we be surprised? We have total corruption in Washington, D.C. We have congressmen back there who swear an oath to uphold our Constitution and then do everything they can to destroy it. They swear to defend our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they are domestic enemies of our Constitution. They send our boys overseas to fight and die for freedom while we're losing our freedom here at home. You need, of course, to get the information that's available from Radio Liberty. You need to understand why we got involved in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And let me suggest my articles. There are three little pamphlets. They're called Foreknowledge 911, and they will tell you basically the story of what happened on the 11th of September and what led up to it, and of course what we know about what really happened, not what you've been told by the government, but what really happened. And then we're running a series of articles, and you'll find them at newswithviews.com. There under my name, Stanley Monteith. And this is called 911, or the true story of 9/11. So go to News with Views. You can read parts 1 through 4. We'll have the rest of them posted as soon as we can. We hope that many of you will want to get our four tapes set on 911 and 911 update. And then one of the latest ones is why did the buildings come down? Where you'll hear the interviews with Sidney William Rodriguez, who was in the North Tower on the morning of the attack, and a gentleman who was with the cleanup crew there the following day on building number 7. Understand, we've been lied to consistently about what happened that day, and the question is, why did they lie to us? And when there's nothing to conceal, why did they conceal it? Did you know that there were something like 22 or 29 hijackings on the morning of September 11th? At least they were following that many on their screens there at the FAA and the military. Somebody was putting all these artificial stories. Did you know that Flight 11, American Flight 11, continued flying towards Washington, D.C. On the computer screens after it had hit the North Tower? Could that really be true? I mean, we don't know what really happened. But we do know that somebody was playing with the computer screens. There were a number, of course, military exercises that morning that were designed to neutralize the ability of the FAA and the fighter planes to respond. There was a normal course procedure. As soon as the hijacking was reported, planes were immediately to be put in the air, and somebody had canceled that. Dick Cheney was in charge that morning. There were special orders. We know because Secretary of Transportation Mineta was in the bunker with Dick Cheney when a man raced into the room and said, "The plane is 50 miles out." And then he raced in and said, "The plane is 30 miles out." And then he raced in and said, "The plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand?" And Vice President Dick Cheney, and I quote, whipped his neck around and said, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything any different? What orders? The plane is bearing down on Washington, D.C. What were the orders?" Well, of course, nobody in the 911 Commission wanted to ask that question, because the last thing they want is for you to realize that the war in Afghanistan is unnecessary, the war in Iraq is unnecessary, the coming war with Iran is unnecessary. Well, pray for America, pray for revival, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.